Who is this? Does it look like a person?
Yes, it looks like a person. A sort of emaciated, pale grey person. The paleness of being without sunlight. Like mushrooms left to grow in the dark.
My goodness. Well, I'm afraid I wouldn't think this was dangerous. I'm worried about this individual, although they are a little unsettling. I'm going to, from where we are, just say, shine my light in their direction and say, hello? Sorry, can we help you?
It sort of snaps its head around, but not to look at you. You can see it kind of to aim ears at you, to listen to where you are, and it hisses. You can't help but notice that its fingernails are elongated like claws. And, it's going to try and detect where you are, Doug. Mind you, I don't suppose you're particularly hiding right now since you just sort of shouted out loud. So I think it will know where you are straight away. And it howls. A forlorn and angry howl. And it strains at the chain. It starts to try to move towards you, and it strains at the chain that is around its neck. Marcus, what do you do?
What is this thing? Is it here against its will? Is there any way that we can reason with it? I will attempt that. It seems to be tied to the wall, so perhaps it cannot actually get to us. We wish to enter. We wish to bring harmony and happiness to the valley. Will you allow us to enter?
When you speak, much like with Doug, it twists its head around from side to side to locate you, and it only pulls harder and hisses more as it strains against the chain, which now you can see that the links closest to where it's anchored to the doorframe are starting to buckle. Ah, and indeed, that's a red card. The chain snaps, and the creature is now, well, still has a chain on it, but it can move around freely. Now, we have a joker. What would you like to do? You can end the run now. Of course, encounter tables don't really apply in the catacomb, but you can choose to continue, or you can start the round again here. What would you like to do?
Maybe we draw again?
Okay, we'll reshuffle and start again. The creature is scenting the air, looking all around. Ah! Okay. It starts to... It can't really run fast because it's trying to figure out exactly where you are, but it sort of scampers a bit and stops and then listens again, but it's certainly heading towards Marcus, that's for sure. And it is now short range only. Oh, and gets another action and closes to contact range with Marcus, arm's length away, hissing and ready to strike at you with its hideous claws. Next action goes to Doug. Doug, what do you do?
Seeing this being rush forward, almost more animal-like than human, I'm afraid at this point I think my nerve is completely gone, because this has become almost like a nightmare rather than reality, and therefore I think I will just assume this gun is good at shooting things. I just get it ready and pull the trigger on this thing. Terrified.
Now, do you think you have that thing on automatic or just one shot at a time?
That might be a... I think we might need to roll a sort of luck roll or something to see if I know, because I don't think I would know.
So I'll do just a classic die of fate. Like, I think on a...
Yes.
I think it's probably better if it's on single shot, given how close the creature is to Marcus.
Yes.
So I'll say on a one or two, you've left it on auto. Otherwise, it's on single, so... Oh, I rolled a three, so good news. You are doing less damage, but not potentially killing Marcus. So that's always a good start. So please, yes, roll d6 for your damage and let me know what you get. Because yes, you're at short range, which is the optimum range for this weapon, so that's fine.
Yeah. That's a one!
That's not great. I mean, to be fair, you are in a bit of a panic. So yes, you fire and narrowly miss the creature, which, you know, ducks and kind of jerks around again, trying to see and figure out how close you are as well, which at least, we may say, makes it pause in its approach on Marcus. And Marcus, it is your turn now. What do you do?
As I see this creature being upon me, I point my shotgun at it, and I pull the trigger, hoping that the proximity will basically make it impossible for me to miss. And knowing the kind of damage that a shotgun can do at close range, I hope that this will take it down.
Now, you are one range closer than you would like to be, of course, being at contact range. So roll d12, but with disadvantage, and see how you go.
I roll a 7 and an 8.
Okay, we'll take the 7, which added to the 1 from Doug's shot, is enough to slay this beast. You shoot it, I mean, full in the chest, I imagine, and, you know, a ragged hole bursts its ribcage, and the creature collapses with a shriek, and the blood runs in those rivulets on the floor and the cracks in the rock. And of course, there's a deafening echo of the gunshot all through the chamber. But once the ringing in your ears has stopped and your hands stop shaking, the way ahead lies open.
I step back and I look to Doug. My, that was that was something. That's no quail.
What on earth is this? What do they do to the poor person? Is this the yellow sash people? Lock him here? Oh my goodness, we didn't have a choice. He came at you. We tried, right? And I am very shocked by this. Still trying to reconcile that this maybe was a poor, unfortunate person, but they. I kind of go to them and shine the light over their features. Do they look like a person?
They don't look like any kind of person you've ever seen in your life. And the mouth, it's like the mouth of a shark. It goes, you know, halfway through the head and those teeth. And it's hard to fathom how this person, if it is one, could ever come to be this way. It doesn't even seem to have any eyes. There are, you know, eye sockets, but they're fused over with pale flesh. No, this is something entirely strange.
I quickly shine the light away, not wanting to look at it anymore. I don't even want to take a picture. I just look at Marcus saying, we need to go on, we need to go on, and then we need to leave. Let's just find something to what we wanted to find. What do we even want to find? I don't know. I'm clearly very, very upset and panicked by all this.
It was coming right for us. We had no choice. It is dead now. It is at rest. And we have things to do. I take out the spent shell case, and I put in a new one. And ready the shotgun as I continue moving forward. Further into this complex.
I almost want to call out to Mr. Von Aston to maybe we should just turn back, but he's going ahead and I don't want to be alone, and it's easier just to do as he says, and I just follow. I don't want to think about this anymore.
Flat, smooth obsidian steps lead down to a floor of black flagstones, ankle deep in oily water. And when you come down here and, you know, let your lantern and torchlight play around the room, you see that here are the missing statues of the holy sages from the shrine above. Life-sized, mildewed, blackened. Their faces and limbs are cracked and smashed. And at your approach, they seem to sense you. There are three of them. and they turn and slowly lumber towards you. This room is, unfortunately, pretty empty, pretty barren, flat and featureless. There doesn't seem to be anywhere you can hide, but they do move slowly, so that might help.
So, looking around this room, other than the way we came, is there also a way forward? Or are there multiple ways out of this room?
Yes, you can see on the far side, or, you know, a little bit on the perpendicular walls as well, that there is a series of openings into natural rock, which look like tunnels that you can follow to go deeper.
And looking at these people again, are you telling me they're literally statues coming to life? At least that's how it seems.
Oh yes, they're quite hollow, like ceramic figures that have been broken and cracked open. Two of them still have their faces. One only has, you know, the back portion of the head as a concave hollow that points in your direction, presumably is looking at you, but there's no features there to convey it.
I think I don't have the nerve for this. I think I want to run, but maybe in my blind panic, at least run further in. I'm going to go to the left, and I just say to Marcus, run from them! Run from them!
Yes.
Let's do the initiative deck. I think you are a couple of moves away from safety. And since it was his plan, I think let's give a free move action to Doug, who bolts along the left flank of this chamber, feet splashing in the filthy, oily water. And then the first action card proper goes to Marcus, actually. So are you following Doug, or are you going to split up and try a different direction? What's your tactic?
We don't want to get separated in here, so I will follow Doug and if it need be, help defend him with my weapon. It worked before, perhaps it will work again. But for now, let's try and outrun them. They seem slow. That's good.
Yes, they are a little slow, so that's good. Yes, you splash through the water behind Doug. The statues get an action next, and they turn to track you, and they move a little closer, going from medium to short range from the both of you, but their steps are ponderous, and you can't help but look at the jagged porcelain stumps that they raise menacingly towards you, where their wrists should connect to hands, but those have been broken off years ago. Doug, what do you do?
I keep running. Wherever we're going, I don't want to be here. And at this point, I kind of want to get out of here. But maybe there'll be something ahead that we can use. Or maybe there's another way out of the catacombs. I don't know. I just need to get away from... This is a nightmare. This is actually a nightmare. I'm dreaming.
You splash onwards. You're so close to an exit. Indeed, you know, just a few more steps and you'll be through. You'll be able to dive into one of these little passageways. And it's... You know, big enough for you, but those statues, they're kind of bulky and they can't bend like a person can. They wouldn't be able to follow you in there. That'll be great. And in fact, it is your next action now. Are you going to dive right in?
Yes.
You plunge into the darkness and leaving Marcus behind would be the uncharitable way to put it, I suppose. But yes. Marcus, yes, you see that Doug has found a way out by the looks of it, and he disappears into the wall there. Ah, but one of the statues has interposed itself between you and that exit. Now at contact range. It can't attack you yet, though. Oh, now it can. And it swings its jagged porcelain stump at you. And you are going to take little damage here, I'm afraid to say. Which will be... Sorry, I'm just looking up some numbers. You lose 2 HP from your 5. as it swings at you. So in this case, HP is not, you know, chunks of flesh being gouged out, but rather near misses. It's when you get to zero that you start to take actual physical injuries. So perhaps a very nasty pointy bit of the statue kind of whistles right past your nose, but you get out of the way just in time. Yeah, Marcus, you have an action now. So you're kind of at punching range from this broken statue, which probably is not where you want to be. If you can move, I would say you're only one move distance away from escape, but I think it will take perhaps some skillful acrobatics or dodging to do it, or you might want to just try and attack it instead or something else.
I'll try to escape it then, try to avoid harm here and get to safety if I can, knowing of course that is a risk, but at least it will hopefully get me closer to getting out of here.
Yeah, okay, go ahead and test your skill. I don't think you have any. I don't think you can fast talk or propaganda your way out of this one, so that'll be a single d20.
Yes, it does not seem as if they're particularly receptive to propaganda. I roll an 18, and my skill is 15.
So that is a failure. I think what I will say here is that you are able to move to close range from the statue. So in other words, you put some distance and it will have to close it up to you again, but you have not yet attained the freedom you so eagerly seek. And then the last card is the Joker. So a new round begins. Yeah, so Dog, you kind of, I guess you're looking back down the passage and you sort of hearing all this shuffling around and splashing and what's Marcus doing? Where is he? I don't know. But the first card out is an ace, and I mean, I don't want to tell you what to do, but I think if you're not in fighting range of the statue and you are in range of an exit, this might be the time.
Well, if I'm able to go, then I will go. That's what I want to do. I want to get up I want to get as far away as possible.
Yes, it's a very, very well-timed action card for you there. So yes, you're able to get into the tunnel, and you know the statue kind of comes up to the exit as well, and you can see this entirely serene face kind of peering in after you, but it's unable to pursue you into the passageway.
I just nod to Doug. I think we've been able to shake them. I don't know what those things are, but they definitely seem dangerous. I think it was the right call to try to run. I think we should try to keep violence to an absolute minimum. I think these things are way more powerful than even our guns are.
I don't understand what's going on, Mr. Aston. I don't understand. Maybe we should leave. I think it's time to leave. We need to find a way out of here. I don't understand why there are... What people... This doesn't make any sense.
We need to do what we came here to do, all right? And perhaps it will make them stand down. Perhaps it will, I don't know, cleanse and purify this place. That's what happens in those adventure stories, you know? The ones I read when I was a kid. Perhaps it will happen here too.
I just nod, really wanting reassurance, and he's Marcus, so he must know what to do best, but I'm very close to wanting to run, but maybe his words are enough to make me at least look around our new location and see what is here. Please, please, no more monsters.
Well, there is a way forward, and it looks like it joins up with some other branches of these caverns that are down here. And you can follow a sort of a natural progression to it, you know, much like following perhaps the course of a dry riverbed. It seems to lead in a certain direction. And you come to a chamber that is circular. The walls are smooth, or, well, they are like made with black stone blocks. Again, it's an artificial chamber. Not naturally formed. And in this chamber, a green-veined marble slab about, let's say, 2 meters square, and that's its top surface, protrudes from oily water And, you know, from this... from where you're standing in the doorway, too far to jump from here, probably. You'd have to get in and wade. And rotten wooden theatre seating extends almost all the way around either side of the chamber to a door on the far side. You know, you could... if you didn't want to go in the water, you could probably climb and jump over to the exit.
But there's something here, isn't there? I try and get close to the water and look at this altar you spoke of. What is it?
It looks smooth. You know, it has that kind of soapy sheen to it, like you sometimes see on maybe a jade figurine. It has that. It's not exactly sparkly and not exactly smooth either, you know. But there doesn't seem to be anything in here. Nothing as terrifying as a sightless guardian or a roving broken statue, anyway. No, everything's nice and quiet in here.
We certainly can't go back, Marcus. Sorry, Mr. Van Osten. Maybe we just need to keep going forwards and at least find a way out. And there has to be another way out of here. There must be. And then...
There will be. We must believe. There will be an exit. There will be a way out. So yes, let us continue. Let's continue onward and try to avoid this water if we can. We don't know what's awaiting in it, hiding beneath the surface.
I once would have thought he was making a joke, and I would have laughed, but... I agree with him. At this moment in time, this place could have anything in it. Maybe this is all a nightmare anyway. I don't know. So yes, I'm going to try and avoid the water and let's get out of this room.
Yes, you can get onto these seemingly, you know, tiered benches, basically. In some places, the wood is so soft that it, you know, it snaps under your feet or your hands. It's a little bit squishily coming away when you grab onto it, but for the most part it's quite sturdy. There are some parts where you're going to have to clamber, though, and for that I would like a strength test from each of you.
1 under 12.
17 over 11.
Just one of those things, really, I think, Doug. You know, you go for a handhold and... a little bit of the support frame that holds this seat up as you're shuffling sideways, keeping your feet out of reach of the water, always looking for toe holds, and you do get it. You get the handhold, but it's, you know, it's between your fingertips rather than a really firm hold, and then one thing leads to another, and with a splash you fall into the oily water. It's not that deep, it's waist high, as it turns out, but of course that's a bit of a shock. Your backside hits the bottom of the pool as you tumble in, and you'll have to kind of splutter and get to your feet with some difficulty. And of course, you're just covered in this stuff now, and it feels, I mean, disgusting. Marcus, you've just seen Doug take a tumble into the drink. What do you do?
I'll try to help him up. As I said, I don't know what is there, so he has to get out of there quickly before something bad comes and grabs him.
Yeah, all right, let's have a strength test from... actually, I guess from both of you, and just one of you needs to succeed, let's put it that way, to get you out quick before anything happens.
7 under 11.
18.
Okay, luckily Doug is good enough. He just needs you to hold your arm out and not fall down, and he can haul himself out all kind of oily and gunked and so on. And do you want to keep pressing on? You're going to have to make a jump from here to kind of to the exit to get out. Do you want to just sit down and take a breather for a moment first, or do you want to get out of the room first?
Well, no, I think I'm panicked by this, and I also take a moment to check my satchel and make sure my equipment is okay, because if the camera's damaged, what's the point of all this?
Yes, it's funny you should mention that. I'm just going to do a bit of a roll there. Ah, okay. So, well, I mean, the good news is the camera's fine. And the film, also nice and safe. In fact, okay, most things are fine, but I guess as you'll discover later, your water canteen, maybe the cap wasn't screwed on right. That's all disgusting and oil polluted now. Also, your guidebook is ruined. It's a soggy, oily mess. That's not coming back. Good thing you wrapped up your rations nice and tight, though. They seem to be okay. I'm going to say definitely just knock off one dye type from your winter clothing. I think that coat is, not in best condition. Nothing seems to happen with the water. After all the splashing, gradually the ripples subside and all is silent again.
I look miserable as I try to very carefully jump across, and this time I really am trying to do it almost like a leap rather than a jump. This time I get a 6.
Ah, very good. And a straightforward skill check for you, Marcus, if you would like to also leap athletically over to the exit.
I will. I roll a 7.
Ah, marvellous. It's all fine, and you are able to continue on your way. And the passage here becomes natural stone again, kind of winding left and right and gradually sloping downwards. And once again you come to a threshold on the edge of black water. Engraved pillars rise on either side along the length of this chamber, which is large. In the distance, a guttering fire on an ancient stone platform lights the high cavern with flickering shadows, and between here and there are 100 corpses floating in silent repose on the surface of the black water.
I take the sight in, and I have to fight the urge to vomit. I sort of just stagger back, and again, I'm still quite soaked. I just lean against Marcus like, I can't go on!
We must. I try to just take this scene in and try to see what is it that I could do here? Is there some way to affect this place? Is this where we're supposed to go? Are we stuck?
There seems to be no further way out. And mind you, it's a long way, but there's a real sense from this architecture that the platform and the fire, these are the ultimate ends of this catacomb.
The fire. You said there's a fire burning then on this platform, is that it?
Yeah, a fire. A medium-sized orange bonfire. It's not clear what exactly it's sitting on or what the fuel might be from over here. But yeah, definitely a fire. Black smoke rising from it.
Perhaps this is it then. Perhaps this is what we're supposed to affect then. Perhaps we must extinguish the fire, I say to Doug. Can I approach? Is there a way to make my way over there that seems somewhat safe?
Well, depends how you define safe. But no, I mean, there's no dry way. This chamber, until the platform, is entirely flooded with the black water.
Then I must pass through the black water. I carefully put my foot in and I begin approaching.
The water is deeper than you expect. Chest high, in fact. You find yourself almost submerged. You might want to hold a few items of equipment out of the water, I suspect. But yes, you can start to wade towards the fire. Doug, what are you doing?
I see him wading into the darkness towards the light, and as he gets away, I look behind us again, and oh God, we need to go through the water. What is this? What nightmare story have I stepped into? I just wanted to come and take some photos. I suppose he might be right. Maybe this will end the nightmare. Maybe. And if this is a dream, maybe then this will wake me up. I don't know. I'm going to follow after him. I'll try and once again make sure this time my bag is safe and above the water. But I'm already soaked anyway, so maybe it's not so bad. And I'll try and focus on Marcus and the light, doing my best to not pay any attention to these corpses, although I don't want to touch one, so try and avoid them if I can.
Yes, they do float about, moving gently in the water, so every so often you have to alter your course or even stop to let one of these, the sightless dead, float past like a sort of reminds you of maybe an ancient mummy that you've seen in some museum back at home. But these are not wrapped up or anything like that. They just look like ordinary men and women from all walks of life in their ordinary clothes, but each and every one of them suffused with the black water, so that all the colour has been drained away from them and the clothes they wear. And the walk through the cold black water seems to take an eternity. But before you realise it, you are close enough to the fire to start to feel its warmth, to hear a little crackle coming from its flames. And when you're a short distance from the platform, the corpses slowly submerge beneath the surface of the water. And then a tall black figure emerges from some flickering shadow beside the platform. An obsidian myrmidon. Tall, giant really, gaunt, and has the air of something unstoppable. And it looms out of the water. The water just comes up to its knees, if it has knees. This spindly thing. It's on the far side of the platform from you. The fire is between you and it. And it seems like a good time to shuffle the initiative deck. All right, let's see. Ah, the first card is an ace, which is Marcus.
So, there's a fire on this platform, yes? And the thing, it's on the other side of the fire?
That's right.
So, is there a way... Well, like, the size of the fire, is it such that I could perhaps utilize my water or, you know, something from my pack. I suppose the water would be the most appropriate to try to extinguish the flames. Do I think I could do that?
It's small enough that you feel like, you could put it out, but a water canteen won't do it. It's sort of it's a fire large enough for a few people to sit around and, toast marshmallows. So the canteen in your backpack wouldn't do it. But if you had, say, a bucket of water or thereabouts that size, then yes, that would be enough to put it out.
And is there any way that I could secure that amount of water, anything that is located close by or that we have with us?
Well, I'm not sure. Did you... I don't think anyone brought a bucket, because to be fair, that wasn't on the to-do list.
Our backpacks and satchels, maybe. It wouldn't be the most reliable. Ah.
Yes, you might... Now, of course, you are chest deep in water at the moment, so it might be difficult to do now, but yes, perhaps if you were to empty out the stuff from your backpack and then use it to scoop water, that might do it, yeah. So, more immediately, would you like to take an action right now, or would you like to stick it back in the deck and wait for a more opportune moment to do something?
I want to act now. I cannot think of anything else but to try to put out this fire, so I'll empty my pack as quickly as I can and just try to scoop up water then.
Yeah, okay, so you're basically going to dump all of your stuff into the water you're standing in, I guess. And,
yes.
Yeah, okay, so yeah, that's one action, filling a backpack hurriedly as this strange being looks at you. Oh, the Joker's come out. I mean, since you've only had one action, I think you might as well start the round again. That's like a free action, isn't it?
Yes, so, let's do that.
Yeah, okay. That is an action for the Myrmidon. And its action is this. A thin crack opens in its narrow obsidian torso, and a sliver of light emerges. And that light flickers across the platform and shines on Marcus, who suffers 5 points of damage.
Oh no, that takes me to zero.
Ah, well, it takes you to less than that, in fact. So, if it takes you below zero, please take out the excess points, if you want to think of it that way, from your strength, and then make a strength test, please.
Right, so then that would be 1 point that I would need from my strength, right?
Yeah, so you go down to effectively 11 strength and then test that.
I roll 17 over 11.
Oh, no. So, Marcus is basically critically injured by this beam of light that sears into him, and suddenly just like you know, kind of cuts a chunk out of his shoulder, and Marcus, how do you obviously you're critically injured, you're not necessarily unconscious or out for the count now, but you're for a start, you definitely dropped that rucksack, and although I think it will float because it's pretty empty now, maybe I think I have to leave you there for the moment, sort of maybe bleeding a lot and half floating in the black water. It's another action for the Myrmidon, which takes a long slow step out of the water and on to the platform next to the fire. Doug, it's your turn. What do you do?
Seeing this creature from hell emerge and fire at Marcus, what can I do? I have a gun. I have a gun. It has to do something. I will run up to the platform, or as much as I can, and just with the Sten that I was holding above my head, I just fire on this being, screaming in terror. I need to save Marcus. I need to save us.
Now, yes, you can't move too much without expending an action, but yes, you can open up on full auto, and conveniently for you, that sentinel has just walked into optimum Sten range, so please go ahead and roll 3d6 for your damage.
5. I feel as I fire, I'm just wildly spraying bullets. I don't even understand how to hold this gun, so the ricochet is probably shaking me.
Yes, it's all over the place, but enough bullets smash into the sentinel, and fragments fly everywhere, and its component pieces collapse onto the platform, scattered hither and yon. Please roll a d6 supply die for your ammo die, just in case. So roll d6, and if you get 1 or 2, it goes down to d4.
That's 3 on the d6.
That's fine. You're still, surprisingly, still got quite a lot of ammo left after that. Let's go back. The Myrmidon is in pieces on the platform now. And the next action goes to Marcus. So, Marcus, you're in terrible shape, but you can still move if you need to. What do you want to do?
I must finish what I started. If I can, I will again try to fill the backpack and I will try to dump the water on it.
Yeah, you'd mostly fill it. I think you can spend an action to kind of drag the backpack onto the platform with you, and it's sort of, of course, it's going to leak. It's probably just made of canvas or something, but it'll retain enough water to slosh onto the fire on your next action. Now, there's the Joker. There are 3 cards left in the deck. Would you like to continue or reshuffle?
Reshuffle, right? Is a better thing to do. Yeah.
Okay. Joker came out first, so we'll just continue. Ah. The fire flares in intensity, and the flames kind of curve and point towards where the fallen Myrmidon lies in pieces. And the light kind of emerges from the flame in globules that drift towards it. And slowly the pieces of the Myrmidon reassemble. And it drags itself together to loom over you once more and above the platform. Doug, it is your turn. What would you like to do?
Again, I pull the trigger. I see this happening and realize I am in hell and this is a nightmare, but I will kill this devil! Keep firing!
Go ahead and roll 3d6 for me, please.
I roll a 10.
Marvellous. Once again, you shatter it into pieces and it collapses. Parts of it fall into the water again. And please do your ammo roll again.
I did, rolling a 5. Still plenty of ammo to go.
Marcus, it's your turn. What would you like to do? You've dragged yourself onto the platform with your bag full of horrible water. What do you do?
I suppose it's now or never. I try to dump the water over the fire to try to extinguish it.
Yeah, now of course you are rather badly injured. I feel like this should be a strength test to get the job done. Please go ahead and test that against your new lower total of 11, please.
7 under 11.
Ah, very good. Yes, the filthy water splashes all over the fire and everything goes dark. Marcus, it is your action. What do you do? It's pitch black now.
That should be it. That should be it, surely. It should be it. I begin backing away, knowing that if it wasn't it, if it didn't actually do it, then that thing is still there. So yeah, I begin backing away.
You feel the edge of the platform under your heels and stop. But all is still. Doug, what are you doing? Everything's gone quiet.
I'm shaking as I hold the gun in my hands. I can still feel it hot as I hold it, and I do stop shooting, and I just stare. I stare in the dark, breathing heavily, terrified. Please, please, can this be it? The end of the nightmare.
It's so dark, you start to see, you know, colours in front of your eyes, because, you know, the human body has to be seeing something, even when your eyes are closed, and even in pitch blackness. It's so quiet in here. Everything has stopped.
Perhaps after a few moments, obviously the lantern must have been put down, or we forgot to light it. I don't know what happened, but surely I definitely would still have it on me. So let's relight it again. Maybe I've got a match in my bag, maybe. I put the gun down and start stumbling in the dark, trying to relight the lantern.
Okay. You get the lantern lit, and you are back in the first chamber, the one where the sightless guard stood. But now all that remains is the rusty chain on the floor, and you can see daylight coming through the mouth-like portal that leads into this place.
The entrance! The entrance! And I just start stumbling. I grab the gun and the lantern. I just run to the light.
The sunlight outside and the fresh air, the smell of the trees and flowers around is... this might be the happiest you've ever been in your life, to be out there breathing out in the clear in the day that you thought, you know, had started to seem like that might be imaginary, and that all that was real was this strange, damp place down under the earth. And the two of you can return back to the village and find Tiger, where he's had his wounds bound and is recovering.
But wait, what about Marcus? What are his wounds? He seemed hurt, no?
He is hurt, and it will take him some time to heal. But they will heal. They will heal. He'll gradually recover. So yes, you'll probably find yourself in the next bed across from Tiger, Marcus, at the doctor's place.
And I think to myself that I now have an amazing story to tell. No one's going to believe it necessarily, but I will know that it happened. It was true. And I begin jotting down the experience, trying to document every detail of it while it's still fresh in my mind.
Yes, and now that you have liberated the fastness of Turia Valley, the charism that was staunched by the catacomb and the evil thought that dwelt within it is released, able to pour forth and fill the valley. The spectre of greed drains away from Turia Valley as a whole, and over the months and years that come, while the Yellow Sashes still occupy the fort for the time being as a military prison, and whatever happens in the future, this community around it, around the, you know, the foot of that ancient fortress, its charism is that of knowledge, and this place becomes a centre of great learning where scholars and wisdom seekers from around the world will come to find the answers to their questions, whatever they may be.
Perhaps as time goes on, I'll look back and think it wasn't so bad, but I suppose I'll never be able to understand what happened, and I'll talk to Marcus and he'll seem so sure, but I'll never be able to understand it. We must just... Something must have happened when we went into those catacombs. A hallucinogenic fume or something in the air, because it can't have happened. But maybe it's best not to think about it. Maybe that's what I have to do to keep myself able to continue.
Yes, and I will remind you that we did something important. We did something to help this community, to help this noble cause, and perhaps what we did these days, these weeks that we spent with the people in Turia Valley, perhaps that would be the spark that would help this nation find its way into the future. That's a hope, at least. But there's a long road still to be traveled. And I hope I can continue to document the story of these people as I do what I can to help bring their story to the world.
Gentlemen, thank you for the game.
You have listened to an episode of Red Moon Roleplaying, where we played Revolution Comes to the Kingdom, which was designed by Tom McGrenery and is published by Porcupine Publishing. Tom was our game master, and you can listen to more of him on the excellent Fear of a Black Dragon podcast. The music was made by Mount Shrine, who COVID tragically took from us a bit more than a year ago. Rest in peace, Cesar. The music was used with permission from Cryochamber. Check out their website at cryochamber.bandcamp.com or their YouTube channel to get music for your gaming table. We would like to give massive thanks to our champions of the Red Moon, Martin Hoyschobert, Nastasha Rawlerson, Simon Cooper, David, Julia, Camilla, Ludwig Manford, Bob Delange, Julian, Cameron, Xavier, and Anton for their generous support. And we would of course also like to thank all of our other patrons. Without your support, the show would not be possible. If you want to support our work, please check us out on Patreon. You can get access to bonus campaigns for Cult Divinity Lost and Coriolis there, as well as get early and raw access to all of our recordings. You can also hear your name read on the show as a champion of the Red Moon, as well as play Cult with us. Most importantly, that support is what keeps the show going, so do check us out there. Thank you again for listening. And remember to support the Crown as we secure a future for our nation.